What's good, everybody? Friday morning edition, NHL Fantasy on Ice, days before the trade deadline, guys. It's Pete Jensen, Rob Reese, and guest Nick Alberga from Sportsnet. Great to have Nick on, as always. What's up, guys?
What's up, Nick? How you doing, man? Welcome back to the show.
I am fantastic. Rocking my Canes jersey today. It's had Aho on the back, the former Montreal Canadian. And guys, I was just thinking as it was coming on here, karma just bit me in the rear end. The fact that I went out there, I picked up Kyle Palmieri, and then he becomes a New York Islander. That's how I feel about that.
Of all teams, right? What you're, I guess, the thorn in your side a little bit, right?
Well, so it's not even that. It's just from a, you know, we'll talk about this, Pete, but from a fantasy value perspective, it's like I rather have him gone to, you know, a Boston or, you know, a Toronto or somebody with appeal in the top six. With all due respect to the Islanders, especially without Anders Lee, they're missing the cachet, if you know what I'm saying.
No doubt. I mean, I do think that he's going to provide a spark to that team on the first power play, which is something that I think that they've been longing for a number of years here. We've been looking, even when they got Pageau last year, which was another splash. So now two straight years of Lou Lamoriello making a big splash at the deadline. You got to give him credit. He's going for it all. But Kyle Palmieri, right, Robbie, is going to make an impact with the man advantage here. He's one of the best in the league in power play goals over the past like five, six seasons.
Yeah, that's the angle I'm most excited for, Pete. It would be that, and then if he gets exposure at even strength to Barzal. Yeah. If he doesn't get the Barzal exposure, right, I'm kind of with Nick where I'm not as excited about it. I'll tell you what it reminds me of, though. When the Tampa Bay Lightning went out and got Barkley Goudreau and Blake Coleman last season prior to the deadline, an already cup contender padding the depth with two really solid players in Palmieri and Zajac, who, by the way, can still play 18, 19 minutes when called upon. That, to me, boosts the Islanders' actual chances of winning a Stanley Cup way higher. So I love the move. I love what Lou Lamoriello did. I think from a fantasy perspective, I'm just kind of waiting in the weeds to see if he does get the Barzal exposure. He's already been claimed in my league. So I will be watching this one from the sidelines, boys.
Yeah, and that's the most important thing, I think, to preface here is this is fantasy, not reality. So before Islanders fans start ripping me up and carving me on social media again, just be cognizant of that. I do think they're a really, really good team. I think they have the ability to go far. But, like, I was thinking last night, outside of Matthew Barzal and the goaltending for sure with Varlamov and Sorokin, am I jumping at the opportunity to own an Islander up front? Like, not really. Like, I haven't owned an Islanders forward in years. Like, I love Barzal, but I've never got my hands on him. I just think it lacks the appeal. Like, I know what you guys are saying, you know, but that team is more so by committee. So I think Palmieri will chip in. I think he's an excellent look in DFS plays, but to have him long-term, you know, especially here as we head into the fantasy playoffs, I'm sort of dicey on that. Like, I hope I'm wrong. You know, the fact that I pick him up too, I'm fired up about, but I just don't know if the appeal is there as opposed to would have been, you know, I think Boston would have been a great fit, but unfortunately it hasn't been.
I agree with that. Boston would have been a better fit, but I mean, I'm interested to see which of the Islanders now many right wings moves over on a full-time basis to the left side. Cause that's where they have the hole with Lee out for the season, as you mentioned earlier, Nick. So, I mean, who is it going to be? Because whoever it is could play with Barzal. I mean, we saw, yeah, Right, Palmieri play a little bit of left wing and didn't have a point in his first game. That was a good thing, by the way. He didn't have to quarantine or anything. He just took a little drive on the road, probably the Meadowbrook, and got right to the Coliseum very quickly. So that was good stuff, no doubt, especially with the time missed for guys like Laine and Dubois a couple of months ago. It was a couple of weeks. But anyway, so who's going to move over to the left side out of like Eberle, Oliver Wahlstrom, who didn't play last night, but should draw back in soon, hopefully. And Josh Bailey is the other option. Who do you guys think is the best fit at left wing?
Well, I mean, Oliver Wahlstrom is one to keep an eye on just because I guess he's a little banged up. I don't know. Compton was tweeting some mixed messages, I think, who covers the Islanders closely. So we'll keep an eye on that. You know, again, if they do battle any injury, whether it's Wahlstrom, whether it's another forward, this move will look even better as time goes on. Obviously, without Anders Lee already, it's huge for them. But yeah, I think I'm kind of on Nick's side here with the even strength appeal. I mean, the only, like I said, the only way I'm going to get up for this one if it's with Barzal. But when you look look at Barzal, I mean, he's a one-man band a lot of the time with zone entries, with chances. And then you have guys like Eberle who are the direct beneficiary of that style of play. So I don't really know, you know, necessarily at the even strength exposure matters a whole lot unless he's with number 13.
Well, number one, don't own anybody from the New York Islanders. Like that's the beginning part. I'm not trying to be down on this team from a fantasy perspective, but there hasn't been a draft in recent memory, especially under this regime, guys, where I'm champing at the bit to go pick up an Islander not named Matthew Barzal, right? Like I think they, you know, they play collectively as a group. All four lines could provide offense. I really don't think they have a name brand on the back end. You know, the power play so-so. Defensively speaking, they're outstanding. The goaltending is where I'm at. Like I have Sorokin, I have Varlamov. I'm loving it. Every game, it's usually two or one, and that feels great. But I think from that perspective, even some of these younger players and Islanders fans will tell you different. You know, they'll say the next Mike Bossy is Wallstrom. I know Kiefer Bellows, he's the next best thing. But I can't get fully behind ownership, even if they're stud rookies, because that team's going to score three goals a game. I know it's a misconception they can't score, but every time you see them win a 2-1 game, you're like, oh, here we go again, right?
For sure. And the goaltending is as good as it gets. It's third in team save percentage. It's tied for first with those Hurricanes after Nedeljkovic got the shutout yesterday. So three for Mrazek, three for Nedeljkovic, and then a combined six for the Islander goalies, including Sorokin, who's been a big rookie stud. But yeah, as far as the forward group, like me and Robbie were even talking about it. Like we didn't really bump up Barzal anymore because the guys in front of him were like the two Vegas guys, Pacioretty and Stone, who have been a little underwhelming, but I'd still rather have them for the rest of the season. And then, yeah, I mean, like some of the other guys, we didn't push anybody else into the top 100 as an effect of this trade. It's more just, you know, we slotted in Palmieri as the number two forward fantasy wise on the Islanders behind Barzal. And then number three, also among the top 100, is JG Pageau, and they actually started together. And Pageau is a guy, maybe he would benefit from this just because he's going to have quality line mates. He was playing for a little bit with Wallstrom, and now it might be like something like Palmieri and Zajac on his line, which is like what the Islanders would do to boost their overall depth. And maybe he would be a beneficiary just remaining fantasy relevant for the rest of the season with good category coverage.
Well, I think another reason too they went out and made this deal was the schedule. I mean, look at their upcoming schedule. They've got, you know, the Rangers, which is going to be a great test. They've got a Rangers on Friday night. They've got the Rangers on Sunday, then two games against Boston. Then they play Washington three times. So I think Lou was being realistic about this team needing that padded stat line. And if you look at their scoring since February 15th, they've averaged 3.15 goals per game, which is tied for 10th in the league. So it's not that they can't score anymore, but with what Nick was saying, when you look at who's actually scoring the goals, it is so spread out. There are seven guys with 15 plus points in that span. So you're not really getting one guy outside of Barzal that's doing all the work. Now, coincidentally, Anders Lee had 12 points in 14 games in that stretch before he got injured. He was the guy this year in fantasy that really took that next level step for me, where I'm like, this would be the first year where I'm all in on owning a player like Anders Lee, not only for the points production this year, but for his staple category coverage that he's known for. So that was kind of my, you know, all around type of move where I like this trade a lot for the team, but I am definitely a little bit cool on Palmieri's fantasy value unless he's with Matt Barzal.
Yeah, like I'm right there with you. You know, I think, you know, I'm a big proponent of bringing in guys that you know and the familiarity factor. And certainly I think what Lou Lamoriello has done, we all get it. I just think the Islanders are missing that bona fide guy in their top six. And maybe Wallstrom evolves to that. Maybe Bellows, you know, evolves to that. But, you know, like a Max Pacioretty type, like a Phil Kessel type, somebody you know who is going to snizzle for you. And I understand it. You don't want to bring in somebody who doesn't, you know, work well with the system, but there are guys out there who can provide offense the way those two can. And I honestly feel like that could be the missing link to a championship for this Islanders team. They're not far off, but they missed that appeal. But I get why Palmieri and Zajac are there. I think they're going to be seamless additions to that roster.
What about a Taylor Hall, Nick, who's probably likely on the move soon? Does that excite you a little bit more in fantasy, not knowing his destination?
It does, for sure. I own Taylor Hall in a couple leagues. I'm happy that he's out of Buffalo. I'm also chuckling the fact that the Sabres are starting to play some successful hockey ever since Taylor Hall has not been in the lineup, namely Rasmus Dahlin. Also, Casey Mittelstadt, I've had a look at in DFS plays the last couple games or so. But I just don't know with Taylor Hall, right? Like, even last year owning him in Arizona, I keep thinking that, you know, Hart Trophy Taylor Hall is going to come back. You can't think that way, I think, as a fantasy owner. I think just the hope is that he goes to, like, a Boston. I know Florida's been speculated, although I think they're after a defenseman right now. The Toronto Maple Leafs could make sense. You know, I just think in general, it's just going to be so hard to make a trade this time of year. And certainly we've seen that, right, with the flat cap and also the quarantine rules that come into effect. So I think you guys make an excellent point when it comes to Zajac and Palmieri, the ability to go right into the lineup if you want to pick them up or not from a fantasy perspective. But you look at Taylor Hall, I think there has to be a level of excitement there as a fantasy owner, just more so of what he's done maybe 2 years ago. I thought he was pretty decent last year with Arizona. And I think in the right environment, I think Taylor Hall can at least start, you know, a mini two-game point streak. Like, we were at a point where it was 0-0-0-0 Patrick Laine style across the board for him.
Yeah, I wonder where some potential destinations are. Like, if it's a team up north, like, say, Toronto or even a potential Edmonton reunion, you never can rule something like that out, especially with a player of Hall's talent. And if the price is cheap enough, and, of course, those guys need – some wing explosiveness, I think, to surround their superstars. But anyway, like, I just wonder if he's going to join a team with an offensive flair, in which case it would really get you excited. Because even what he, those numbers he put up the 1 year with like almost 40 goals and almost 40 power play points. I mean, he was a one man show on the Devils. You still want it. That's why you were excited to see him with Eichel, which you really didn't get the chance to see this year. You want to see him playing with an elite centerman, because you really haven't seen it in many, many years since maybe he played, you know, some shifts with like McDavid back in the day or something like that. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to with Taylor Hall. What's maybe an underrated destination for him where he could land and play with an elite center? Otherwise, it's probably going to be that middle of the road Taylor Hall that we've seen on and off for the past 3 years since his MVP season.
Well, I think we got to give him more of a shot here. You know, as we discuss this, it kind of is clear to me that I think there's more teams in this probably than we think there are too, especially after seeing the price that Palmieri and Zajac were acquired for. I mean, they gave up a late first. I mean, Islanders are picking 25 or later, as far as I'm concerned, in this draft. And when you look at Taylor Hall, just because of the quote unquote damage that has been done to him and his value the past few seasons, I think you're looking at maybe a second round pick, maybe a late first again, if there's a bidding war between teams. But I think after seeing what the Islanders got, two guys that can play 20 minutes as forwards for one first round pick, I think a lot of teams are going to look at this Taylor Hall situation and say, this might be the year he can catch lightning in a bottle. He can make an impact right away, Nick. And Taylor Hall, let's not forget, when he gets going, he's as hot as anybody. He can drive an entire line. So even if you put him on a second line, like a team like Boston or something like that, I mean, he could drive every single possession for them at even strength and then also contribute as a major factor on the power play.
Yeah, I would love him, quite frankly, in Boston. I just think it gives them the ability to disperse their big boys who normally play on the perfection line, you know, evenly throughout the top six, the top nine. To a degree, this week in this busy five-game slate, they've had success with, you know, Craig Smith in the top line, Nick Ritchie on the second line. I think Taylor Hall would just give him much more in terms of a depth proponent, right? And that's the one thing I think that's been missing from Boston this season, especially the big boys. Like, they haven't produced the way we've seen in the past. And I think they've really lacked the depth. So I think Taylor Hall makes a lot of sense there. Toronto for sure. I just think from a cap perspective, not to bring it back to that, I think teams have to get creative, maybe include a third team. Like, I think it was last year, where Toronto was included in a deal that, you know, got Robin Leonard to Vegas. I think eating salary is going to be a big part of the conversation when it gets to deadline time here in a couple days. But I will mention my stealth Taylor Hall team. It's the Minnesota Wild. Why not, right? I don't think it's going to cost an arm and a leg. I think Bill Guerin, to a degree, owes it to this team because they performed above what the expectation was. And I think if Taylor Hall fits, then maybe you take a shot, because I don't know how much money he's going to get in free agency. I don't know how long the term's going to be. I don't know why you would sign long-term right now, considering this economic climate. So why not go out there and take a flyer on Taylor Hall? I say do it if you're Minnesota.
That's a good creative idea for sure. I think the Florida Panthers are another team, like somebody mentioned them before. I mean, the one thing with them is, like, Ekblad was out for 12 weeks, right? He's not on long-term IR, so they don't get that extra cap flexibility. But the Florida Panthers would definitely be in on adding a player like Taylor Hall if they could fit him in, or maybe even Aristolainen with some of their situations on defense, especially. I think they could benefit from adding a player of that caliber. And that's another thing about Buffalo. They have multiple players on the block. So you could very easily see, right, multiple Sabres go, including Hall and either Reinhardt or Ristolainen or Ullmark or someone like that, go to a contending team and be sort of a package deal.
So do you think a team will give up a first round pick for Taylor Hall? Do you think Billy G, they're not going to get a first round pick for Taylor Hall, right?
Nobody's. I don't think
it's a bidding war, but
I can't see it, maybe. Guys. Like I just think Taylor Hall has really lost the appeal, right? Like, especially with what he's coming in at, you know, I understand what we're going to be 2/3 done this season. So we're looking around around 3 mil. My math is never around, but like, I think they have to get creative, and that's the problem they're going to run into. If you want to look at a true contender to bring in Taylor Hall, you're going to need teams to cap maybe more than one and make a four team deal, right? That's the problem Toronto's dealing with right now, is they're still involved, from what I understand on Taylor Hall. You need to find a way to eat money, and that's the problem. And then there's the element of risk, right? Which is weird to say because it's Taylor Hall, but he's just been so dreadful this season. And I don't know about you guys. I'm throwing this fantasy season right out the window. Even from my perspective, being in a couple keeper leagues, I have really good rosters, and half my teams have been decimated not only by injury but by COVID stoppages. Like, it's just that type of year where every day you wake up, you have no clue who's going to be on your roster or not, especially in this 5-game week, even losing a goalie like Yaroslav Halak, right? It's just been that type of year. So anything could happen from that perspective when it comes to Taylor Hall, but I just think there's that risk. And number two, I don't know how much, financial support or teams have in terms of, space for a guy like Taylor Hall. So I don't think there's really going to be a market where people are battling back and forth from. I think he probably goes for a second and a prospect or something like that.
And with the contract situation too, it's murky. With the expansion draft situation, it's murky. And then with the third team potentially involved, I mean, look back, we just discussed on the last show what Colorado got Sam Girard in that 3-team deal, and they end up as the winner just a few seasons later, clear cut above and beyond. So pay attention to stuff like that. I will say, and close the Taylor Hall segment by saying, I agree with you about him going to the right fit. I don't want to see him go to a team that plays by committee. I want to see him go to a team. See, and now last season, what is funny, I would have told you that Arizona would have been the perfect fit for Taylor Hall because he could have been the guy there. But we see it over and over again in fantasy when these guys sign with teams that play by committee, when the point share is too diverse, too thin, it doesn't work out. It doesn't pay off like it should. Whereas if you go with fire wagon hockey like the Bruins, if you go with the odd man rushes like the Leafs, those are the teams. And Florida Panthers, throw them in the list too, that Pete mentioned. Those are the teams where Taylor Hall could really take off.
And that's a really good point, to bring it full circle here in this conversation, guys, to my point about, GMs being smart, and Lou Lamoriello is amongst them, bringing the right player in. Like, J.G. Pageau fits that mold. He did this last year. I think Palmieri and Zajac play that Islanders brand. I never comprehended why Arizona went out there and got Taylor Hall to play in Tippett's system in a defensive-minded system, right? Like, it would have been like my thoughts on the Islanders picking up Taylor Hall. I just don't think it's a good fit, though. So I think to your point, I think teams have to be smarter with who they pick up. I know not really from a fantasy point of view and a lens, but I think you have to be smart about your pickups. You don't just go out there and pick up Taylor Hall because you want a boost of offense when you know he can't play defense or he's not fitting in defensively, right? So that's a really good point.
It's really tough too when you think about the short timetable, and especially a guy like Hall. Now you start to hear rumblings like, oh, he might want to sign longer term with the team that trades for him. And then you have that potential baggage if it doesn't work out. I mean, one thing that comes to mind is like one of the hottest scorers in the NHL right now, Vincent Trocheck, was traded at the deadline last year, did virtually nothing offensively for them tail end of the regular season and in the playoffs. I don't even remember if he was in our top 250 in the preseason. He probably, maybe he was, it, just because of his hits coverage, but like, you didn't know that he was going to erupt like this and be like a top 75 overall player even when missing some time. And he's got what, like points in 12 straight games played or something like that. But that was the luxury you had with him. You knew you would have him the following season. And that trade, which we really liked at the time, has paid dividends the season after. Whereas Taylor Hall, unless you pony up and pay, you know, some money for this guy over some term, it's just, it's a little risky to do that because you haven't seen much lately from Taylor Hall.
Yeah, I have no clue what he's going to fetch on the open market. I think it's baby steps clearly with Taylor Hall, but I think you make a good point that I think as a fantasy owner, I think you want to play both sides of the puzzle. Like I've had questions the last couple of days. What does this mean for the New Jersey Devils who could elevate their play? I think you have to have that mindset when trades are made in reality as a fantasy owner, because I think I always say I love to extract the most value possible. So that's a, you know, a unique way to look at it, even in Buffalo. Maybe we'll decompress everything after the deadline's all said and done. And we'll talk about who could potentially provide some, you know, statistical coverage over the remaining games of this season. So that's a good point.
Well, let's talk about centers here, piggybacking off the Trocheck conversation. And Ryan Getzlaf's a name that Pete and I have on our fantasy trade deadline piece names to watch. Now, he's currently out, I guess, with an upper body injury. Yeah. Hopefully it's nothing serious there. I don't think we think it is. But a team that has been linked to him has been the Pittsburgh Penguins, maybe a team that is a contender, fringe contender with some center depth right now, whether it's with injury or just lacking it to begin with. Do you think a player like Ryan Getzlaf could make some dividends for you in fantasy down the stretch run here, or do you think it's a little past the prime?
I think he can. Do I think he's getting moved? 99.9% he's not. From everything I understand, I think he's really, really fine in Anaheim. Loves it there. He's the captain there. I think he's open to re-signing there. He's had his day in the sun, right? Like he's won. I think from that point of view, I get it. And I don't think he wants to reroute his family, even if it's for just the remaining part of the season. To answer your question, I think so. Who wouldn't be rejuvenated by a trade? You know, I think to an extent last year, you look at Ilya Kovalchuk, what he did with Montreal. I think there's some underlying value in an Eric Staal with the Montreal Canadiens. I think you give vets like this, you know, a Getzlaf, a guy who's been there before, the opportunity to win a Stanley Cup. I think they seize the moment and they raise their play. So without a shadow of a doubt, if he does get dealt, which again, I think is really, really, really unlikely, I think Ryan Getzlaf's appeal in fantasy hockey would be there for me. I would take a flyer for sure.
And waiver wire James a couple of days ago mentioned that he would be a good fit in Minnesota too. And maybe that's a position of greater need for Minnesota if he were to become available compared to Taylor Hall, who we were talking about earlier. They got some great wings and those guys are rolling, by the way. Yeah. You won't find a power play out there in the league that's hotter than Minnesota's right now. Jared Spurgeon, who we were hyping on one of the previous shows, had 3 power play assists. You look at the league leaders in power play points and goals since the start of April. Kaprizov's on there. Fiala's on there. Spurgeon's on there. So get a piece of those guys in fantasy any way that you can. One other big storyline that kind of parlays off the Panthers is Spencer Knight getting recalled to the actual lineup. I mean, they still have Bobrovsky, who's been pretty good this year. They have Chris Drieger. And now they have Spencer Knight. Does this mean that they're going to trade Chris Drieger, who's a 2021 UFA? What do you guys think about the Panthers goaltending? Could we see Spencer Knight in the next couple of days here?
See, this is where I would draw the line. I love Spencer Knight. I think he's the top goaltending prospect right now in my book, no question. But I think if you look at the Florida Panthers season to date, this is where you need to make sure you have enough horses to stay in this race, especially in that division. Whether you finish 1, 2, or 3, it's going to be tough. Even with this fourth team in the division too, Pete, like breathing down their necks now, playing some better hockey. Look at what Nashville did against Detroit, 7-1, Victor Arvidsson hat trick in the return. Nice to see that. But point is, Chris Drieger has gotten them to this point. He has been consistent. He has been reliable. He's a quality starter. And I think giving that opportunity to Spencer Knight is just too early in the game for me. This is a move that you make over the offseason prior to the expansion draft, prior to the regular entry draft, something like that. Yes, not right now. Florida needs to add and not subtract.
Yeah, from what I understand, I think they have to have one goalie in the expansion process. It's got to be Drieger, right? Because Bobrovsky's got probably every no trade known to man and $90 million left on his deal. And you know, Knight is not eligible. So I think it's got to be Drieger. I'm right there with you. I own Drieger in one of my leagues. Important to note, the last 8 games, they've alternated starts between Bobrovsky and Drieger. You know, I chalk this up to just Florida giving the kid a bit of a look, if you know what I'm saying, at the NHL. Hey, this is what you can have eventually. But I would not make any decisions right now when it comes to Spencer Knight and throwing him into the fire, especially in a playoff run, especially the way the Panthers are contesting for number one in that division. I don't see it. You know, I just chalk it up to that. And I think down the road, he's going to be a stud, but it's far too early to compromise anything they have going right now, because both guys have been very solid in my opinion.
Yeah. One deep league, I threw in a claim for him. I think he was just added to Yahoo's system, maybe like Caulfield was a couple of weeks ago. So we'll take a couple of days to see if I land him, but he'll be like a bench fourth or fifth goalie for me in that league. So I'll take my chances. I'll see if they make a move, and if the deadline comes and goes and he's the third string goalie and not seeing a blip, then I'll just drop him. But that is a keeper league, so it's something to watch out for sure.
Not bad at all. Like, how about your guy Jeremy Swayman with Boston? What's going on there, right? Because, like, I don't want to say this guy came out of nowhere, but in my world, he did, right? I know he won the Mike Richter Award a couple years ago, but I think Boston is in a really precarious position. Granted, there is some cushion in the standings. They have some games in hand on Philadelphia, but I don't think they were completely happy with, you know, Tuukka Rask, although he's banged up. Yaroslav Halak's been hit or miss the last month. Dan Vladar is what it is. And I think as long as Swayman keeps winning, I think you throw him out there. So I think from that perspective, in a DFS look, which I've done this week and had success, I think you take a look at Swayman. I know he's wearing number one. He looks like Andrew Raycroft out there, but it's just unbelievable to me, guys. These goalies come out of thin air, but not really, because they're highly touted prospects. And from everything I gather watching the broadcast, they love Swayman in Boston and his future. But start thinking about that as well with the Bees maybe turning things around in between the pipes a bit more here in the next little while.
Well, and Swayman's 22 years old. He's got the pedigree. He was 8-1-0 in the AHL with a .933 save percentage. Bruce Cassidy, credit to him for having the guts to roll this kid out against Philadelphia, who has been playing better to their credit. He stopped 40 pucks in that one on 42 shots face, and then throw him back in the net against Washington, who he made 32 saves against. So there you go. First two wins, looking like an immediate fantasy playoff contender for your team. I would add him. Now, for my situation, just to be clear, though, I am rolling Shesterkin, Samsonov, and Nedeljkovic, which I do not feel is good enough for my fantasy playoffs. That's why I'm looking to add a guy like Swayman to be my new kind of Kaapo Kakkonen type player, where when he gets the opportunity, he's going to win. Unfortunately, now for Kakkonen, it doesn't look like he's going to have a whole lot of value for the remainder of the season. In come Jeremy Swayman.
Yeah, and I would just add to finish up that thought, guys. I think from a fantasy playoff perspective, and I know everything's different this year, it's just so bizarre to me that we're starting playoffs in one of my league with the deadline on the same day, but so be it. Just the nature of the ball game in this fantasy season. I think you throw patience out the window and you go after it a bit here. I think you have to be very, very aggressive as a fantasy owner and make some tough decisions. And if, you know, guys like Halak aren't playing or sitting on your bench, like even the Vancouver conundrum's huge right now. There's a lot of owners out there getting set for playoffs, and you have Canucks on your roster. Who knows when they come back? I think you have to make some difficult decisions this time of year.
Interesting that Swayman was drafted in his year 2017 outside the top 100. So total hidden gem. He's from Alaska. I mean, cool storyline. And then he's 2-0-0, .947. But maybe the biggest reason to take this performance seriously is, like, similar to Nedeljkovic in Carolina with Reimer and Mrazek being expiring contracts, you see the same thing in Boston. I mean, that could be a real changing of the guard with Rask and Halak both being potential 2021 UFAs. So it's not just flash in the pan when Rask comes back, Rask will regain the throne. I mean, this is something that's up for grabs long-term in Boston. And, you know, he has youth on his side, you could definitely say.
And that's exactly it, too. I think as we've talked throughout this conversation, guys, about the flat cap with COVID, I think, you know, teams like Boston, who we still feel could extract a bit of value in being a contender the next couple of years, if you have the ability to roll a guy out there on ELC, granted, again, we have to temper expectation. It's a couple starts for Swayman. It's a great story. Dan Vladar, all this and that. You're going to need at least one vet in that pairing. But I think if you can chisel away at the money in your crease, it goes a long way. Like, even a team, as you guys know, I cover in the Maple Leafs, they have a, you know, an opportunity to do some stuff in the offseason, at least from a Zach Hyman point of view, because Jack Campbell, he's been an exceptional story. And I think it's very, very likely at this point in time, a team like the Maple Leafs go with a tandem going into next season and having the ability to maybe pay your 1A and Jack Campbell $1.5 million. There's just so much value in that. And it's a copycat league, right? We started the conversation talking about Goodrow and Coleman and those additions last year for Tampa. If teams start to see that, I don't think they're going to spend an arm and a leg in the crease, because we've all seen in Florida what's going to happen there, right?
And just piggybacking, I do want to touch on Vancouver real quick for the fantasy owners out there. I did drop Brock Besser and picked up Dustin Brown. I would recommend anybody that needs guys in the lineup to do similar moves, similar positions, guys that cover categories, go for that. But back to the tandem thing, I think it's increasingly important in fantasy. We're seeing it more and more. I mean, Washington is another example of this season where you just need to have two guys going for whatever reason, whatever extenuating circumstances there are, you need to have two guys. Carolina now enters the conversation and says, hello, Nedeljkovic and Mrazek is a great tandem for the rest of the season, right? And now we're seeing with Boston, who, by the way, on Twitter, there's a conversation for the past week going on about, is Tuukka Rask a Hall of Famer? I don't like hearing that as a Tuukka Rask fantasy owner, because I want him to play this season. I want him to come back and play well for that team, right? Well, like, I'm not ready to discuss that right now. I want him to come back and be the guy for Boston, but I think it's ever more important that you make these moves now, because we've seen it too many times. Jake Ottinger, same thing, come in, make an impact right away, and that's what it's looking like Jeremy Swayman's going
to
do.
Well, that's just the rumor to finish up, is that Tuukka Rask is going to retire after this season, right? So it's just crazy. You're right, though, guys, you know, handicapping goaltending in fantasy has become next to impossible. Like, I think you're at a point where you're handcuffing tandems. You know, one of my teams have had a lot of success in the Islanders crease. It's so crazy. And I was talking to my co-host Cord Stellick a couple days ago. Just, I remember the times in fantasy where you take Marty Brodeur like seventh overall and you're good. Like, you're winning goalie cats every week. Now it's just so much different, because usually when these guys come up for the American Hockey League, nobody's seen them, especially in this season. So guys like Swayman, you know, I'll see, you know, when teams start figuring him out, how he adapts, but they come from the minors, nobody's seen them. And, you know, they're winning 3, 4, 5 in a row. And next thing you know, you're the next hot thing, right? I just think the caliber in goaltending has really elevated the last couple of years. We'll say that. And the analytics show that you need more than one guy. And that's what teams seem to be trending towards right now.
And even some of the best goalies out there. I mean, if you were going into the year drafting Marc-Andre Fleury in the top 75 or Varlamov in the top 75, right? Like, that would have been a risky pick at the time, because you don't even know if they're going to be the starter for their team by the end of the season, or, you know, so that's what we've seen. Like, we've seen some guys like that emerge, and even Grubauer. Grubauer had like major injury concerns prior to this season, and he's been as good as he was prior to that shellacking the other day. I mean, brought his save percentage down a little bit, but approaching goalies long term, you look for a young guy, a rookie, maybe who's a second or third stringer at the time, and say, this guy could take the job by the end of the season. Take him in one of the last rounds of your draft. Learn from this season, and you'll see guys like Swayman return value based on ADP in the years to come.
Oh, without question. And I think, you know, just to bring it full circle, you know, Boomer Gordon, who we've both, you know, all of us have worked closely with from NHL Network Radio, I think, you know, has had the advice the last couple of years of being patient when it comes to goaltending. Curious to see, you know, if your mindset, guys, will change going into next season drafting goalies, because I think we'd all admit we've been burned. Like, this year I was high on Binnington. I was high on Freddie Anderson. I was high on Carter Hart. High on Robin Lehner. Those guys are all my top five. You know, I do still think it's Vasilevsky and everybody else, but Pete and Rob, I think I'm changing my mentality going into next season, because it is a tandem world, that I may be waiting and being a bit more patient when it comes to goaltending. How do you guys feel?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, in this season too, I thought that it was going to be important to have workhorse guys, but you're right. I mean, it's basically Vasilevsky, and then credit to Marc-Andre Fleury for being a workhorse when Robin Lehner was out of the lineup. So that was nice to see, but you need to draft, you know, almost the tandem strategy for sure. It just helps you so much. The only time when that would burn you is when the schedule is light for that one team, but you can pick up a streamer, right? You can have a streamer spot starter. I do want to ask you about Jordan Binnington though, Nick, while we have you on today, because the Blues did win a major game against the Vegas Golden Knights. You know, it just takes that one, you know, to get the rust off. Parayko's back in the lineup now. Do you think he has any appeal, you know, maybe buy low this time of year for the rest of the season in fantasy?
So I've been asked this question a lot in my weekly mailbag the last couple weeks, and I just keep throwing it back to the same thing. Who are you picking up? You know, I guess you look at some of these rooks like Swayman and say, hey, I'll take a shot. But considering where you drafted Binnington, I think you live and die by the sword. You know, I think you're right. It was one game, but Binnington was outstanding. And I just have this feeling, at least to me, at least, where the Blues have one more run left in them, right? Because that roster, you look at it and you're like, why is this team so bad? Like, even Torrey Krug has never got going this season. Tarasenko's back in the lineup. I know a couple guys are injured right now, and that's been a thing with this team so far this season. But I still have that feeling the Blues are going to string a win streak together and get into the playoffs, and I think they're going to be a tough out. So with that, obviously there's going to be a bit of value attached to it when it comes to Jordan Binnington. So I don't know where you guys stand. I'm probably staying put on Binnington more so because what's out there is not really appealing in my world. And I think the best opportunity to win and get fantasy value is going to be with Binnington here.
That was a good sign the other day for sure. I think now is the time. Like, his value is still so low. You could throw a trade offer because it's trade deadline season in fantasy leagues as well. So yeah, if you're really in dire need of like a guy who could end up being in a quality number two goalie on your roster, I think somebody that's out there that owns Binnington in fantasy that's been rostering him through these struggles would probably unload him if they have a third and fourth goalie that have been, say, more productive than him. So yeah, I do think it's a good buy low spot for sure. Excuse me. And then the Dallas Stars are another team that I think if they make the playoffs, they're going to be really dangerous. And we keep seeing these flashes, like we see the 4-point game from Rupe Hintz, right? So, and then we hear news that on Saturday, they're going to have Bishop, Sagan, and Radulov on the ice with the taxi squad. So now you don't know how soon any of those three or all three could be back on the ice for a game, but I mean, that's really encouraging. Like, hearing that news after a big puck line win last night, I mean, the Dallas Stars are sitting pretty, especially with those games coming up next month against the Red Wings.
Yeah, and that's the disappointing part for me, guys, when you look at this fantasy season from Dallas, is I don't think we're going to get the opportunity to enjoy Tyler Seguin, to enjoy Ben Bishop. And I, for one, stashed one or two of those guys in most of my leagues, you know. There's been no word on Jonathan Toews. I don't think he's coming back this year at this point in time, maybe next season. But those type of guys that we looked at in our drafts, Tarasenko is playing, which is great, that we stashed away in our drafts. I don't think we're going to be there to, you know, get the fruits of that labor, right? Like, I just think we're running out of racetrack in this season. Dallas needs to win some games. It is encouraging. I just don't know how quickly these guys are going to get back. And the Radulov file is the one that gets me. Like, he was off to just a tremendous start, and then he just hasn't stayed healthy. He can't stay healthy this season. It's unfortunate, but I do agree with you. I think you look at Dallas and the depth that that team could add. I don't think they're going to add at the deadline, but the ability to add a Tyler Seguin, you know, Radulov potentially back to that lineup, Bishop, they're going to be a scary, scary bunch.
No, and I made the same move. I just picked up Seguin the other day. In fact, I dropped Kaapo Kähkönen for Seguin just to put him on my IR plus because, you know, you can't miss on a player like that, especially with Dallas and their depth scoring right now. All these guys, Robertson, Hintz is playing tremendous, right? So Seguin's just going to come back in there, and the team in general is going to take off like a rocket ship. So definitely, if you can make that stash, I would say do it. Ben Bishop is going to be an interesting one just because of his injury history. Now, you know, how much is he realistically gonna start? I could see him taking that next step in the postseason, but Ottinger's kept them in, fared pretty well, so I would expect him, you know, don't get too crazy and go out dropping a player like that in fantasy. Definitely hang on firm there for the remainder of the season. But I do think Dallas, Pete, is going to be a great team the rest of the way. And for St. Louis, you know, the only reason I'm still a little iffy on that team would be they've got a game against Minnesota on Friday, they've got another one on Saturday. If they get 3 points there, they're great. If they get anything less than that, I think it's going to take on too much water.
Two key injuries that have happened in the past couple of days: Blake Wheeler out with a concussion. He's not traveling on their road trip. I would say go out and pick up Andrew Kopp if he's available, right, guys? And then Steven Stamkos, I guess, left the game late yesterday. Hopefully it's not serious, but two injury situations to keep an eye on. I think Winnipeg and Tampa Bay both have the forward depth to survive these injury absences. But do you guys see any waiver wire appeal from those two teams, Tampa and Winnipeg?
Oh, let me throw my boy Ross Colton out there. They're like putties, you know, it's like Power Ranger putties that they just bring these guys from a factory in the American Hockey League. And next thing you know, they produce at the end. Like, I think Colton's got 6 goals and 9 points in 14 games. Who is this guy? Like, and that's why Volkov was another guy who they can deal to Anaheim. Like, it really, really is insane what they've put together there in Tampa. And it started with Steve Yzerman, now with Brisebois. I just think they just do a tremendous job identifying talent and bringing them and teaching them along. And Ross Colton, guys, a guy I would look at right now in DFS and take a look, because he's been money in the bank. And I think John Cooper, the one thing I love about him, he rewards you if you're playing well. And I think Ross Colton's a guy who could elevate up the lineup here.
Well, and you look at their most recent game. I mean, Yanni Gord had 4 apples and Anthony Cirelli was -2 with no points. And you're like, how does this happen? How is that possible? So yeah, Ross Colton, I'm with you, Nick. I mean, you can do a lot worse than getting a guy from Tampa Bay who has 4 points in his past 5 games, 4 goals at that. So go ahead and pick up Ross Colton. I just would say if Yanni Gord's available, that would be my preference, but I think he's got to be up around 60% ownership now. So if you're in, you know, a deeper league, Ross Colton would be your guy. That said, to answer your question, Pete, about Stamkos the rest of the way here, that one, yeah, I'm not worried about that team. You know, as far as them hanging in it, they will, no matter what, they can withstand that injury. But that's one, it's going to be especially important for fantasy owners to make a move now, just given Stamkos' history with injuries. If you're the Bolts, you have to be super cautious here. I mean, look no further than the Carey Price situation. Now reports out this morning that they're going to reevaluate in a week. I don't like hearing
really?
That. Well, that's Eric Engel said that they'll check in next week. So let that be what it's worth. It's nonetheless, same thing with Steven Stamkos. You just can't risk it for the biscuit. So Tampa Bay, sit back, be patient there. But, you know, fantasy-wise, make a move just in case Stamkos is going to be on the shelf for a little bit.
Is it like, here we go again? Sorry, is it here we go again with Carey Price? If you want to talk about transparency in 2021, and I am still laughing over that letter put out by Anaheim last week, the transitioning of Trevor Zegras to center. What a move. Montreal, for some reason, guys, when it comes to Carey Price, it's like mum's the word. Like, they're so quiet, you have no clue what's going on. So I hear that news from you, because I've been doing this podcast. It alarms me if I was a fantasy owner, Carey Price, because you just never know. Like, he can be back next week and he can be back in 2 months from now. So I think right away Jake Allen's on my radar. He has to be. And maybe I'm overanalyzing the situation, but that's how I feel.
Well, he did say, the coach, that they're confident that he could be back at the end of next week.
They're buzzwords.
Are we confident?
Exactly. You know,
how many times has this exact situation played out under Mark Bergevin's watch?
Exactly.
And go back, mark the Edmonton game on the calendar when they kept Carey Price in there, and tell me why he didn't come out if he was feeling whatever, a little soreness, whatever it was. That stuff has happened way too many times in that market.
Yeah, just no words. It's like the commercial, no words, guys.
Well, we're going to get to the Friday slate and before we let you go, Nick, but there are a couple of hidden gems out there. We like to identify them, especially early. Colin Blackwell, New York Rangers, playing with Panarin, playing on Power Play 2. He has 11 goals on the season. For whatever reason, they're giving him a bigger role, probably because he's earning it over Lafreniere and Kapokako. So take that for what it's worth. There's also this kid, Radim Zahorna, from the Pittsburgh Penguins, 4 points in his first 4 NHL games. Some fans on Instagram clamoring that this guy's huge. He's 6'6". He's going to earn a bigger role. I love it. I love where your head's at. And that's a team, right, guys? Like, we're talking about the Lightning being a total factory from their prospect pool and the AHL. The Penguins certainly in that same mold. They always come up with hidden gems. So, you know, somebody to watch out there for sure.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you on that front. I just think you look at Pittsburgh, it's been quite the turnaround, guys, since, you know, they made the change. Well, I guess Rutherford resigned, but, you know, Burke and Hextall come in. And I remember at that time, everybody's like, oh, Pittsburgh's done. It's time to trade Letang. It's time to trade Malkin. And, you know, I, for one, am shocked they flipped the script this way this season. The goaltending's been better. I still don't know if I trust Tristan Jarry or Casey DeSmith in the Stanley Cup playoffs, but it really has been a nice story. And again, here we go again. Sidney Crosby elevating his play without Malkin. Malkin does it when Crosby's out. and not really talked about, guys, is the offensive season Chris Letang is having. I just picked him up in a trade in one of my leagues, but in general, I just think he's been a beast every night. It's like 2-3 assists on the back end on the power play, so you're getting coverage that way. And I just think in general, like even Jake Gensel's a guy who's just been on complete fire. So I like Pittsburgh. I just don't know if it's sustainable. And then when you look at the Rangers, Blackwell might be the hardest working guy in this league. Like, I watch a lot of Rangers games. He doesn't get the looks, obviously, on the power play, but he works so hard, and that's the MO of the coach there. So he's given him opportunity, and he's taking it right now.
Well, I want to respond to redeem Zahorna here.
The dream.
He's playing 8 minutes a game. So I'm all for the hidden gems, as each of you know. I'm not picking up Redeem Zahorna.
Can't
just
even
yet.
Say his name.
Right. Okay. Get back to me. Yeah. Dan, add that to the list too. Dan Vladar and Redeem Zahorna. Next week we can talk about him if he's on the waiver wire and he's still keeping up, maybe. But I do think, you know, like you said, credit to Pittsburgh. It's truly phenomenal what they've been able to do with their injury history the past 2 years, with the change in management midseason. Like, that takes a lot. Now, for the Rangers, I do not want to take the depth players there. The reason why: they look great one night, the next night they get blown out, they look good the next night. I just don't like that, you know, continuous up and down roller coaster in fantasy. I want a little bit more steady. So I would go back to the Bolts, you know, teams like that, the Avs for depth guys. I mean, throw a dart at one of their, you know, bottom six forwards, and you'll probably get some assists from them in the next couple of games. So I would look at the safe teams there before going too far off the rails.
Apologies to the Zahorna family as they unsubscribe from this podcast.
Well, Friday slate, what are you guys looking at? I'm looking at some of these teams on second of back-to-backs. Islanders, Rangers, one of the best games of the night, no question. And also Nick was talking about some sneaky value on the Devils. Who's going to take on a bigger role after this trade of Palmieri and Zajac to the Islanders? So far, looks like Pavel Zacha maybe will step up to the plate and deliver. He moved back to center. He scored 2 power play goals on Thursday for the Devils in their win over Buffalo, and very quietly leads the Devils in scoring this year and leads them in power play points, tied for the lead. So that's another hidden gem that could perform for you in DFS and that you should watch out for. Maybe we'll finally start to live up to his draft placement from a couple of years ago.
You know who'll perform for you in DFS? Michael Conforto. Who am I? Who am I? I'm going to put my elbow on the plate. What a joke. Anyways, on my mind. I'm like, I couldn't believe that watch night, and they let it stand. I think you're right. I think, you know, it's important to stress. I don't know about handicapping this time of year, guys. It's a bit more difficult now that teams are starting to buckle in here and win some hockey games, right? You're not seeing the underdogs win as much. I think it's important to note down the stretch. Yeah, there's going to be a couple spoilers, but for the most part, you know, with 15, 14 games remaining in this season, there are teams that are after some division titles here. So they're going to start railroading people and teams. And I think back-to-backs, they're going to keep winning. So I think it's puck line city right now these days.
Well, could you be possibly referencing the Colorado Avalanche, who are -345 on the money line tonight against the Anaheim Ducks? That one, watch out. That could be floodgate city. For DFS-wise tonight, I actually like the appeal in some of the Devils, as Pete brought up. It's funny because the advanced analytics crew, it was pointed out to me that on Twitter, they were saying that the Devils somehow benefit in terms of quality of wins or something from this move. So maybe there's something to that. I don't know. I didn't read too much into it. It kind of went over my head, but maybe the Devils will benefit from this, from guys having higher ice time. I wasn't seeing that, but they did have a nice win, 6-3 against the Sabres. So maybe there's some appeal there as a home dog tonight. Very limited appeal as a home dog tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I'm looking. Give me some Dahlin. Give me some Mittelstadt. Like, I don't know about you guys, in my waiver wire, my leagues, like I don't even pick up guys anymore when I have the opportunity, because there's nobody I want to pick up. Like, we're at that point. You're looking at Redeem the Dream as a Horna, right? Like, like, it's just like there's no cachet to any of these guys anymore. Like, it's that deep in this league, in this season. A lot of guys are on the injured list, or they're picked up. Like, there's just not much depth left. But I think that's, you know, to wrap, like, I think that's the conversation to be had from a DFS standpoint, is the elevation for guys on sellers like New Jersey. I think you want to look at guys like Brad and Zach, maybe a Sharon Govich, Kuokkanen, guys like that, who are going to receive all the ice time in the world because they're finished and have no stress and no pressure. Another team's Buffalo. Like, we'll laugh at this right now, but the Sabres guys have I don't even want to say quietly, but they're playing better, right? They're providing some offense. They're getting some points. So I think from that perspective, maybe you ride some of those guys who are just stress-free at this point in time.
I actually like the Penguins on the puck line if we're making some picks here against the Devils, both teams on second of a back-to-back. I could see them winning like a 6-4 game or 5-3 type game. Doesn't matter who's in net. I think the Penguins will win that game and probably by 2 goals or more. So that's just a hunch I have. And then, King Sharks get back at it. It was a nice response from the Kings the other day. Hey, right. They were, you know, they've been down in the dumps. They've been losing all these games in a row, and they came in with a third period rally and beat the Coyotes. So maybe look for the Kings. I don't have a strong feeling about it, but the Kings have lost what, 4 straight to the Sharks. Maybe it's the Kings' time, especially after that stinker the other day from the Sharks. So I like them maybe carrying over the momentum from that third period comeback the other day, and the Kings are slight underdogs. So why not? Kings over Sharks, I think.
Yeah, and I like the fact that the Kings opened as a favorite and then swung to an underdog. So that's something to keep an eye on. And I think that Pittsburgh game is ripe for an old parlay somewhere across the board, whether you want to pair it up with a baseball game or something like that. I just don't see Jersey winning the game. Hey, by the way, a shout out to the scheduling folks over there. Big baseball fans, Brian Tarracone, if you're listening, I know you listen to every episode, by the way, but I mean, what a chintzy Mets win that was, sticking out the elbow. And Tarracone's at the game and celebrating like it was some, you know, gap or double. Give me a break, Conforto. Are you kidding me with that? I mean, that is bad karma, bad baseball juju coming his way for the rest of the year. Maybe for the rest of his career with that one. For the gall for him to be at second base having water poured over his head after doing that. And Brian Tarracone, as a baseball fan, a baseball purist, you're actually celebrating that. So listen to that, Brian. Okay. BT, regular listener, does a great job with the schedule, by the way. So give me the Penguins. I like the Kings play. I haven't looked at the baseball board, but a parlay in the mix, and Colorado is just going to steamroll the Ducks. I mean, totally steamroll the Ducks tonight. So, listen, take the puck line, do whatever you got to do, get Colorado in there somewhere.
Last note of the program, if you've made it this far, Cole Caulfield making his debut for Laval Rocket tonight. A lot of eyeballs on that AHL game. Let's see what he can do. If he has a big one right away, I think he's going to go right downtown to Montreal, and we can see him suit up. So hopefully soon, because Petey and I need that. One of our leagues would be the icing on the cake there in an experts league.
Yeah, and with Gallagher out 6 weeks, it could be a real possibility very soon if he, you know, has a multi-goal game in his Laval debut. So, yeah, we're looking forward to that for sure. Nick, thanks for joining us, man. I know you got to run. Thanks. Yeah. Appreciate it, man. Follow Nick at the Golden Muzzy. Great stuff.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me, and enjoy the deadline on Monday.
Thanks, we'll Nick, and we'll be back with everybody possibly later Monday, if not Tuesday morning. We can recap the deadline, all the crazy action for you guys. In the meantime, on Twitter and Instagram at NHL Fantasy, send us your questions, your comments, concerns, whatever you got, and we'll talk to you soon.